Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Greg, be honest with us. What do you really think of our podcast?
You guys suck. Your podcast sucks, and you're in the wrong effing business.
Okay, Patrick, so recently I escaped the suburbs of Northern Virginia, mm-hmm. and I went back to my hometown of Toledo, Ohio for a little trip to visit the family.
Right, and you go to Browns training camp every year and cover that.
I wish that were the case.
This would be a great year to go.
Yeah. But this was about 6 weeks ago. It was around the July 4th holiday, mm-hmm. and I went and visited the folks, and I thought, while I'm there, maybe I should record something, you know, for the show and bring it back as a little gift to everyone.
Yeah.
And so let me just start by saying that I want everyone just to indulge me on this. This is sort of a vanity project for me. And so I hope people enjoy it. Let me first tell you that this is Rockin' the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And as I mentioned, we record this show in our where we live here in the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And you grew up in this area, but I did not. I am from Ohio, but have not lived in Ohio since I was 18.
Right, so
been all over lots of different places, but I tried to go back once or twice a year. Anyway, I mentioned the indulgence here. I thought it would be fun for me to sit down with a guy who is sort of the dean of Toledo, like local music.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
He's been in a lot of different bands over the years. We're going to talk about that. We're going to kind of go through the different bands he's been in and, you know, sort of started by trying to do like original music.
Okay.
And then later found as he got older that he could really make like serious money by being in a cover band.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And playing, you know, festivals, weddings, mm-hmm. you know, still some bar gigs, things like that.
Right.
And that's kind of what we're going to talk about. So you may not know this person. You may not know his music, although you're going to hear some of the music in here. But I think to anybody who's a music fan will be able to relate this story to like other bands that they know in their towns.
Yep.
You know, it's that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you're going to hear in this, which is probably worth the price of admission, I hope, is the story about how I first got to know this guy.
Okay.
His name, by the way, Stephen J. Athanas.
Okay.
When I was in high school in Toledo, I was on the committee that was tasked with hiring the band to play the homecoming dance my senior year.
That's a big, important job.
And we chose Steven's band at the time called the Wet Shavers.
Oh, wow. You got a
and
band.
And they played. That's so, great. Yeah. So you're going to hear the story of why we settled on this band in particular.
Okay.
I think you're going to enjoy that. So the interview kind of starts off a little bit also with a strange coincidence. You're going to hear about how Steven's son is in a band that is active here in Northern Virginia called Kid Brother.
Okay.
Well, you and I have talked about them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point we hope to have them on the show, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the only reason I bring that up is because you're going to hear sort of like this weird, like, oh, wow, like, isn't that crazy that we have this connection? And that goes on for a couple of minutes and then we get into the interview proper. So I just want to let you guys know what this is all about. All right. This is part one of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow there will be a part two also. So you're going to get this over two segments. All right.
Cool.
So here we go. Here's Stephen J.
Please.
So Stephen J. Athanas, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for saying my last name correctly.
Did I get it right? Okay.
Yes, you did.
How did people mangle
Athanas,
that?
Athanas, Athens.
Yeah.
Although, ever since I was in grade school.
Yeah. I get that all the time, too, with Lenihan. People look at it and they go Lenman or, you know, whatever. They can't.
It's, just look at it.
It's exactly how
exactly.
you would think of it. But anyway.
Yeah.
What sort of name is Athanas?
Greek.
That's what I thought.
Papa was a Greek. Mama was an Italian. I got the Mediterranean in my blood.
Yeah. So you were asking me before we started here.
Yes.
About where I live. So I'm a Toledo native,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't lived here for some time. So I live in Northern Virginia in a community called Ashburn, which is in Loudoun County. And although I set this up with you a couple of weeks ago, this interview,
right?
I did not know until today, this morning, as I was doing some research to prepare for this interview. And yes, listeners, we do prepare for the interviews. as I was doing some research, I come to find that your son plays in a band out near where I live.
Yes. He lives in Leesburg, Virginia.
Yes.
Sam.
That's right up the road from me.
Yeah, I know. I know the towns you mentioned. Yeah. He's in a band called Kid Brother.
Yes.
And I don't know how much I'm allowed to divulge. They're still working the kinks out, but he's got label interest.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
I would think so. I saw them play.
You're kidding.
No, I've seen them.
That's so cool.
This is the weirdest coincidence, right?
I know. So you coming in and this pops up.
It had nothing to do with me wanting to talk with you, but then I find this out and it's so weird. Yeah. I saw Kid Brother play. It's been a while. Probably around the time maybe they released that album
in
2017.
Baltimore Street Rat.
Yeah. It was probably shortly after that I saw them.
Well, they've got a new keyboard player.
Right.
Her name is Piano.
No, is that funny?
Yeah.
So your son is the drummer.
Yes, he
in
is.
In that band. You couldn't convince him to go into something else, right? Do something else with his life?
You know, I kind of kept my lips sealed. I didn't want to say anything, but both of them were in drum circle or drum corps. Is that what in high school?
Drum corps. It's similar to a marching band.
Yes, they were both into that. And Sam just kept going. And like I said, he majored in percussion in college, but then got a business degree. And so I let him find his own path, both of them. And Michael went into the tech world, and Sam is, keeping my fingers crossed, going to replace his father as the actual rock star in the family.
All right, so I want to talk about that. So the reason why I wanted to have you on the show is this. When I was in high school, I was on it must have been through student council, I think.
Right.
I was on a committee where we were supposed to pick the band to play at our homecoming dance at Bowser High.
Uh-huh.
This would have been, homecoming would have been the fall of 84.
Okay.
My senior year. And that was how I became aware of you. So I'm going to circle back to that in a second here.
All right.
But then it just seemed like over the years, even when I moved away, you know, my mom would give me articles about different bands in Toledo.
Oh, really?
You know,
cool.
She was the kind of person who, you know, knows I'm interested in music. So she'd clip newspaper articles from the Blade and send them to me. And when I would come back into town, I would go, fairly recently, I would start going to Culture Clash when Pat,
you know,
rest in power, was still around.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And he turned me on to this record that he put out with your help, the Breaking Glass record, which had some different Toledo bands from back in the day, including a band you were in called The Best.
The Best,
and so then I see your name there again. And so anyway, over the years, even though I haven't lived in Toledo for a long time, it just seemed like the name Stephen J. Athanas
was more
always coming up, right? And so you're like, you know, you're some sort of a godfather of Toledo music here or something, right?
Yeah. Big fish, small pond.
Okay. Well, hey. And so tell people, I'm going to circle back to the homecoming in a little bit.
How long is the show, Jim?
we'll see how it goes. I do have editing skills. So.
Okay.
So tell people, I have a list here about some of the different bands you have been in Toledo.
Okay. I won't go through every one of them because there is a lengthy list, but my very first band was called Jello. It was with my brother and... for those in Toledo, nobody will know in your neck of the woods, Walt Churchill III, his family was very big in the grocery business.
Yes.
You know that.
Yes.
So Walt Churchill III and my brother and a drummer were in Jello. And then they kicked me out. My brother kicked me out of that band. And then that was in high school and flirted around with some acoustic stuff, nothing. And then got into college, freshman year of college, and someone came up to me and said, "Hey, you want to start a rock band?" And that was it. I took off with that, quit my freshman year. We started as a blues band, the Strongheart Blues Band, which morphed into the Raisin Band,
okay,
which was very popular. And still in Cincinnati, they are gods, not as the Raisins. They're now called the Psycho Dots.
Okay, I know this band. This was bringing back another memory that I had forgotten, maybe suppressed. I don't know. But I think that was how your name came up again back in the 90s. Because they played, the Raisins were a Cincinnati band,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And I knew them because my sister went to the University of Cincinnati.
Okay.
And I have some other family in Cincinnati. So again, sort of like just through osmosis, I knew this band.
Yeah.
But they also had a connection with Adrian Belew.
Yes.
Right?
Actually, the first time they met Adrian, I was in the band as the Raisins. The Raisins, I left and moved to New York City seeking fame and fortune. But while I was still a Raisin, we played in Nashville one night at a place called Fanny's. And Adrian Belew came in. I think he might have been playing with Zappa at the time. And Fanny's was a pretty good rep for going to see live bands. So Rob Fetters, the guitar player in the Raisins, and Belew hit it off.
Yeah.
And they stayed in touch, and I think Adrian produced the Raisins album.
Uh-huh.
And then Rob and Chris Arducer and Bob Neiswanger joined forces with Adrian as the Bears.
Yes.
Yeah. And they put out, what, two albums?
Yes. So you were not part of that?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I saw them in...
The Bears?
In Bloomington, Indiana.
Good band.
So where are we here? So you were in the Raisins.
I was in the Raisins. I played with them a pretty long time, probably about 4 years. We got pretty good. And what we would do is we would play in Toledo in a few clubs. We'd hit the road and work our way down to Pensacola, Florida, shooting off to the Carolinas, Kentucky, and Tennessee, play in Pensacola, then work our way back up here mm-hmm. and play in Toledo and repeat that cycle. We did that for like 4 years. And at that age... It was bliss. The Raisins were starting to go into more writing their own songs, and I was into that, but it was not really. I wasn't as good as they were, to tell you the truth. I mean, Fetters is a monster, and so we. I left the band mutually and moved to New York City to try and find a band. That was right when Springsteen was hot, so I was all a go-go about that and becoming the next Jersey lad, which plummeted horribly. But and you know, I ended up working restaurants as a waiter, lived there a year, and then came back to Toledo with my tail tucked between my legs and lived in my mom's basement for a while. But the music thing was there. And so I had, you know, I left some people behind that were still good musicians. So I put together a band called The Best, which was two of my brothers, Dave on guitar. Dave is a really good guitar player.
So Dave took you back.
Dave took me back after kicking me out. Yeah.
Okay.
So The Best was very short-lived. It seemed a lot longer than it was, but we had a riot. It was right when a new wave came in. So, and as opposed to the way Toledo has a tendency to be, we found a niche group that wanted to hear Costello and The Clash and XTC and the ska stuff. So we were doing it, and people were digging it. Plus, we were integrating some of my original stuff. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, sort of a kind of power poppy kind of band
thing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Tom, the keyboard player / guitar player, played a Farfisa, mm-hmm. the classic cheesy ass organ.
You said that band didn't last very long. You did some recording, right?
We recorded a double 45. It was called Four Big Ones. You're saving up the only one you said I want before. I wish you'd tell it to the boys who knock you on your door.
Company, but never mind. Okay.
And it had three of my tunes and a cover of NRBQ. Are you familiar with that band?
Yeah.
We did a cover of Green Lights. I was really big on NRBQ. We did a lot of their stuff. And, you know, it did all right. But now I go to Goodwill every once in a while, and I'll find one of these. And who wants it?
Well, hey,
my mom's gone, so.
Yeah. But at least it's still out there, right?
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
it'll find a home.
And I have to think that, I think the songs still hold up.
I think those are good songs.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, excellent. You. I was really excited when, like I said, when I got that Breaking Glass record that Culture Clash put out. You know,
yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting you say, though, the Toledo music scene, what was that like back then?
It was tough. I mean, towards the end with the Raisins is when disco came in, and we just refused to bow to that.
Right.
I think we did Skin Tight by the Ohio Players, and I think we did a couple Average White Band songs, but that was as close as we would get to it. So it was that was a thing with the Raisins. We had to, you know, play second fiddle to disco. The other thing was just it's really hard to play original music in Toledo. Now it's changed, and there's a scene, you know, the Ottawa Tavern has been reinvented in downtown Toledo, and there are original bands down there. But nevertheless, I mean, if you want to make money, it ain't going to be playing your own stuff.
Right, right.
So
maybe it's a little bit easier today because you have channels that you can get your music out.
Yes.
I just remember back then, so this might be a little bit later than what you're talking about, but when I was a kid, I guess in the late 70s, early 80s,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was FM 104.
Yep.
It was whatever the top 40 station was. I can't remember. You know, the radio, the commercial radio wasn't going to play the kind of stuff you're talking about. Elvis Costello or XTC or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There was no internet. There was no way to experience this stuff. You know, maybe if you read Rolling Stone and you wanted to take a chance at going to buy a record unheard, which when you're a kid like me, you don't want to do because you don't have that much money to spend on records.
Yeah.
So it was really, it was hard to get into any kind of like niche kind of stuff, right? So it's interesting that you say there was, though, some
audience we had a good following.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we went down to Cincinnati once and played down there. That went well. But I mean, I was a junkie for that stuff. I was stuffing music in my ears constantly. And I didn't really have the money, but, you know, I would take in pop bottles and sell the old stuff that I didn't want anymore.
So how did you discover that music?
Pretty much, I had started working at FM 104, actually.
Yeah.
I did morning radio there for a while. So I would sneak into the library, the FM 104, and it was extensive. It was probably two times the size of this wall behind you, large, because we're on radio, and just sort of pilfer stuff that I knew they'd never play, Jim,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
I wasn't interested in Foreigner's new CD or album at that time. Forget that.
Right.
So, you know, anything that looked interesting to me, I kind of took on. And eventually, not at 104, it was another station, I started my own show called The Delinquent Disc Review, and so the label started sending me that stuff.
Okay.
They were more than happy, because,
you had a show where you were allowed to play.
Yeah, and I was playing
stuff that maybe was otherwise.
The Specials and XTC and Costello and all
that's
stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. Short-lived.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it wasn't until Buckeye Cablevision finally got MTV that anything sort of anything different would hit your ears, right?
Yeah,
it was all very, it seemed like it was all just very mainstream.
Yes.
So the best after the best, then
happened? There was a couple poopy bands. There was one band, I'll tell you a story and you can edit it if you want, but there was a band that I played in called PLZ, and it was an offshoot of the best. My brother was still on guitar. I think my other brother was still on bass. We had a different drummer and a different keyboard player, and we played at Second Chance in Ann Arbor.
I think it was
a Sunday night, and we're on a break, and the club had a really nice break room downstairs, and so we're all down there goofing around, and the doors open, and in comes Jerry Lee Lewis.
Really?
With two bodyguards. Turns out he just played a show in Detroit, and it must have been an early show. Came over, And so I don't ask for a lot of autographs, but I figured, you know, this is a legend here.
Of course, yeah.
But I couldn't find a piece of paper. So I found a styrofoam cup and a pen. And I said, could you sign this? And he looked at me like he wanted to just kick my ass right then and there. But he begrudgingly signed it. And so then as I got braver, I said, well, what do you think? What'd you think of the band? And he looked me right in the eyes and he said, son, you suck, your band sucks, and you're in the wrong business. And that story has made the rounds of bar bands.
It's, you know, that's such a satisfying story, though, because it would, you know, for Jerry Lee Lewis, it'd be disappointing if he was like, oh, you guys were great.
Yeah,
you know?
To soft soap
no,
you.
Yeah. No, this is, that's exactly what you want, how you want that story to go, right? Do you still have the styrofoam cup?
It's in one of those sketch pads, I think. Oh, wow. I have a collection of pads back there, so.
Very good. Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah, I had a couple interim bands that weren't all that hot. Then I hooked up with a band that was already together, sort of pushed my way in there. And we became Loved by Millions.
Yes.
And that was a fun group. We had two guitar players, keyboard player, drummer, and myself. And I skipped the Wet Shavers. Is that the band that played it?
Yes, at the homecoming, okay. Yes. So right. Wet Shavers were in between the best and Loved by Millions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Wet Shavers for a second here. But also, I just want to point out that you guys were not modest at all in the naming of your bands.
Oh, heck no.
Right. which you know, you hope would be good marketing, right?
Well,
people would be like, yeah.
I always felt that I was never really a great singer, per se. But so what I lacked in singing chops, I would make up by making a fool of myself on stage.
Okay.
Just jumping around and being the fool. So, yeah, the best, I thought, how cocky can we get? And so it worked. The Wet Shavers, the way we got that name is a friend of mine who's a drummer. We're in an adult bookstore over on Reynolds Road.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking around. I picked up a magazine. It was called Young Wet Shavers. And I thought, that'd be a great name for a band. So we dropped the young.
Yeah, right. Good. That was a good move. Yeah. Okay.
So you didn't know that when we played your dance,
no,
did you?
No, not at all. But but you'll have to confirm if this memory is correct or not. So here's what I remember. So I'm on this committee. We have to pick the band for the homecoming dance. We wanted to do a good job. We wanted to get somebody really good, right? And but we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know how to do this.
Yeah.
So I called. I literally just called FM 104. And I said, what's a good local band for our dance? And they, if my memory is correct, I think whoever answered patched me through into the booth, like the DJ. Like
no
this,
kidding.
This, I don't know who it was. But, yeah. You know, while the song is playing or whatever, he's talking to this high school kid and recommending local bands.
Wow.
And I don't remember if he recommended any others or not, but he said the Wet Shavers and that name, you know, that immediately, you know, stuck or whatever.
Right,
and so then, of course, being very diligent about this, we were like, okay, so we need to hear them play. And you guys were playing at Howard's.
Okay.
We were underage, but we worked it out that if my dad came, they would let us in to see the band, right? So we did. So it was maybe a couple of friends and I and my dad and drove down to Bowling Green. We saw the band.
Yeah.
And we liked you guys. And then I think we actually met with you because I remember you had a list of the cover songs that you knew.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, of course, you know, being high school kids, we have to know, like, what are they going to play, right?
Yeah.
And I can't remember what they all were, but I do remember this. This was the song that clinched the deal. And if I'm remembering this incorrectly, you know, tell me. But but I remember on the list, you guys knew how to play a song by Prince called "Jack You Off."
Yes, we did.
Okay,
yes.
So I am remembering this correctly.
And that's,
of course,
what clinched the deal.
Of course, we high school kids, we thought this would be the greatest thing ever if they'll play that song at the dance, right? And so you guys played at the dance, and I remember telling a friend of mine to go up and request the song, and then you guys played it there, and we just, of course, died, you know, laughing. So that
did
was
anybody
it.
Get in trouble?
So, I don't think so. You didn't get in trouble,
did
you?
No, we didn't. Okay.
All right. But that, you were contributed to the delinquency of many.
Of course, yes,
know,
and the downfall of...
That's right. So that's the story. That's it.
That's a very good story. Yeah.
As much as I know, but so that memory is correct. That was one of the songs you guys knew.
Wow.
So yeah, it was fun. I remember it just being a lot of fun. You guys were great. You guys rocked the cafeteria of of E.L. Bowser High School.
Bowser High School. Yeah. Cool. It was, I'm sure we did other, I know we did other high school things.
So what was the wet, so describe for people, what was the Wet Shavers like? How was that different from the best?
Well, the musical feel was different because we had two guitar players and everybody was willing to try anything. So we did a version of, is it Dolly Parton? Here You Come Again.
Yeah. Yep.
I sang that. I mean, we just tried to be as ludicrous and crazy as possible. So there was that, the keyboard player, Chad Smith, great guy, great musician. Not initially, but one day he brought his accordion to the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. And so we started integrating that into songs, and we started doing a couple of Los Lobos songs, stuff like that. And then, I don't know if you know this, but our bass player, we had two bass players in the band. One I bumped heads with him, so another story. But the guy we replaced him with was Scott Schreiner.
Okay.
From Weezer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because he was from Toledo.
I did know that Weezer had a guy from Toledo.
Yeah. 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 So Schreiner played with us for a few months before we broke up. And then he went out west and fame and fortune was there for him.
He joined Weezer later on, right?
Yeah, it wasn't immediate.
Yeah.
I think he played with a couple other bands before Weezer picked him up.
Weezer died when Matt Sharp left. Weezer didn't start until Scott Schreiner got there.
Another of my claims to fame.
Yeah, but how about that?
Yeah. Jerry Lee Lewis and Scott Schreiner. The list goes on. Yeah.
So, and you did some original music with the Wet Shavers too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the best on, we started doing, well, actually the Raisins did too, doing original music. Loved by Millions, we released two cassettes. That was okay then.
Okay.
Right? So we never pressed them onto vinyl and or CD.
So with all these bands, were they pretty much based on the guitar, pop, 3-minute songs, that kind of stuff?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Never really got into the jam bands, never really got into the Dead or any of that stuff. Right. It was our MO was like, get them dancing as soon as possible, get them drinking so that the bar's happy, and the girls. It was pretty much those three things.
Yeah.
And we would just harp on it. Get up, start dancing. Let's go. Get up, damn it. So, and it worked. I mean, people tend to only dance to things they know.
Right.
But if the beat is solid enough and repetitive enough, we were successful in getting their asses off the seats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you harbor dreams of being signed by a major label and going on and being rock stars?
Okay. Constantly.
And what did you do to try to achieve that?
Well, we sent stuff out. Both I did as an individual. The Best sent stuff out. Loved by Millions sent stuff out. And there's a few rejection letters in those sketch pads back there.
Yeah.
It seemed like the market, Toledo market, wasn't in Athens or Seattle. There was talk of a while, I don't know if you knew this, that it was going to be the next Athens, I think, Georgia.
I had no idea.
Yeah. See how successful that was. So, yeah, we tried, but just didn't do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I tell you also that I saw the video of the Wet Shavers performing on that, like, Bowling Green TV
Girl-aholic.
Station. Yes, Girl-aholic, right. Uh-huh. My main takeaway from that is the guy, the host, when he's introducing you and you go over to play, he says,
turn down the volume of your TV sets, because here they come, the Wet Shavers.
Call it Abby, answer the phone. It's Friday night and for once I'm alone. Lonely, that's the problem, and I need some advice right away.
turn down the volume on your TV set.
I thought that extremely odd, too. Yes. You know, not crank it because no. Here they come. Turn it down now. This is public TV.
That's right. That, public TV in the mid-80s or whatever it was. Yeah. That was their thought. Like, this is a little too much for our right. normal viewers.
Our ballet troupe will be right. out next, right. but just be patient.
That's right. And we'll link to this if that's okay on our
absolutely
on our website. But high energy, like you said, yeah. you know, even in that where you're just in some TV studio with probably nobody there, you had a lot of energy.
Had to. Yeah. I mean, again, part of it also was nerves. I mean, I don't think I was really nervous per se, but the energy just funneled through the nerves and I was just jumping all over the place. So.
The other thing you said on that clip during the interview portion was that you didn't consider yourself an artist, but an entertainer.
I regret that. If I had to do it over again.
Okay.
But, you know, that was my mindset at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Que sera, sera. Yeah,
but like you said, you're trying to entertain people, right?
Absolutely.
There's nothing yeah. wrong with yeah. that. That's a noble pursuit.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. This is Frank Sinatra of Northwest Ohio.
There you go. Okay. All right. So Love by Millions, and then where do we go from there?
Love by Millions, and then while Love by Millions was still together, was when the Blues Brothers and the horn bands, I mean, not, it wasn't Blood, Sweat, and Tears and that stuff, but some of the horn bands started coming in. So I wanted to do that. So actually, I was working at FM 104 at the time, and they were doing those Rally by the Rivers downtown.
Yeah.
So I put together a band. It was going to be a one-shot just for that. And it was called Billy Rubin and His Ace Cargo. Billy Rubin was a disease that my son was born with, common. It was, I think, the cheesy fungal stuff. I mean, it was just a temporary thing. It was nothing okay. life-threatening okay. or permanent. But it was called Billy Rubin. And again, light bulb went over my head, and I thought, Billy Rubin, Jewish influence. And so we played a Rally by the River, and it was an 8-piece band. We had a 3-piece horn section, keyboard player, drums, guitar, bass, and myself. And we did all, back then, it was also the swing stuff. It wasn't just the Blues Brothers, but there was a lot of that swing, 40s, 50s. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of pretty obscure tunes. And it clicked, and nobody really wanted to let it go. So we replaced a couple members who didn't want to make the commitment, the Homewreckers came out of that.
Got it.
Homewreckers.
Yeah.
So that was probably the longest. No, not probably. That was the longest band. I think it was 20 years.
Yeah. The Homewreckers.
An institution,
a
man.
Staple yeah. of the Toledo yeah. music scene, right?
Yeah. I mean, my thing was back then, I don't want a band that lasts more than 2 or 3 years because I want to keep it fresh, so okay. mix it up. But the Homewreckers, I was getting older, and it just, you know, you couldn't kill it. And that was a pretty much exclusively cover band.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had one song that the keyboard player and I wrote, and we played it one night. And I have a recording of it. Thank God.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But other than that, it was a cover band.
Okay. And what kind of covers? So it was the R&B
yeah,
flavor
Motown,
kind of stuff?
Yeah, Motown, R&B, blues, rock and roll, Chuck Berry. I mean, you know, we did Beatles, and so we were kind of all over the map yeah. also. We did some Sinatra, because the Homewreckers got so popular that we became... a really hot, if not the hot, wedding band, which is an irony. Who you have playing for your wedding? Oh, the Homewreckers.
That's right.
Hey, good. So often when people come up to me, oh, you played our wedding. I said, and you guys are still together? Well, no. Sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't.
But don't blame you, right?
No. I gave them what they wanted.
That's right. All right. And that was super fun. I went to... To Steven's house in Toledo.
Great stuff.
And we sat and recorded this. And just to give you a sense of what he's like, I mean, he didn't remember me. He, you know, like I said, I had this one small interaction with yeah. him when I was like 18 years old.
Yeah.
Long 1984, before, so a long time ago, but he's the kind of guy who, give you a sense of sort of his gregarious personality. When I pulled up, he was working in his garage. He has like a, he's a visual artist now, and was sort of working on some stuff with the garage door open, kind of sitting there. Yep. And I pull up in my car and I get out and he just says to me, "Jim Lenihan, you old son of a bitch." Like, he's that kind of guy. You know what
great.
I mean?
Yeah. You know, I really like the Jerry Lee Lewis story in that one as well. That's pretty classic stuff.
Fantastic.
Yeah, great stuff. The killer tells the truth.
Yes. Fantastic. So, all right. As I mentioned, we're going to get part two of this interview tomorrow where we're going to talk about being in a successful cover band. And playing a lot of weddings and stuff like that. But he's also going to sort of talk about some of his other kind of weirder projects that he's done.
Okay.
So in the time that he's doing, cover songs, over the course of 20 years and playing weddings, stuff like that. He's right. also trying to stretch other muscles and, do some more interesting original kinds of stuff and go in some really different directions. So we're going to talk about that a little bit too. And
cool.
He did a couple solo albums and all kinds of stuff. So. If anybody wants to correspond with us, you can email rock@suburbspod.com or you can call and leave a message and we'll put your voice on an upcoming show. That number is 612-440-1984. Or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod.
Cool.
Please also visit our website, suburbspod.com. And please support our show on Patreon. If you get a chance, you can get some bonus content there. Go to patreon.com/suburbspod and please rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts.
That's
also
easy to do.
That's also really helpful to us. So all that stuff. All right. Let's get into part two tomorrow. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Catholic girls kind of liked us too.